from KQED.
Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, coronavirus deaths in the United States surpassed 100,000. And according to California Congressman Adam Schiff, as the pandemic spreads, so too does harmful misinformation about treatment, transmissibility, and cures. Congressman Schiff joins us now to talk about his efforts to push Twitter and YouTube to notify users when they've engaged with misleading COVID-19 posts. And we'll also hear his take on President Trump's executive order, which is expected to be issued today, removing liability protections for social media companies, and on the Senate Judiciary Committee's inquiry into the Mueller investigation. And welcome back to Forum, Congressman Schiff. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
I guess the place I'd like to begin with you is just to apprise our listeners of the fact that there's a lot of harmful misinformation that's going out on social media. That's no surprise to many, but where this pandemic is concerned, it's particularly of concern. The World Health Organization has called this an infodemic. What do we do to flatten that curve, particularly in light of the fact when disinformation is coming out often with no idea where the source or where it's coming from?
Well, that's one problem when you don't know where the source is coming from. It's another problem when the source is the President of the United States, and we're running into both of those difficulties. There's a lot of dangerous misinformation out there about cures, phony cures that could actually cause harm to people. There's false information about what causes the coronavirus. There's a whole conspiracy theory that it's caused by 5G technology. And so it's going to be enormously important, I think, at every level, both in the public sector and the private sector, that we do everything possible to push out good information, to let people know where trusted sources of information can be found at places like CDC, for example, but also to put down this rampant misinformation that could cause people, and indeed has already caused people, to take steps that threaten their health.
There are, however, you know, certain things that have come through social media that proved to be wrong, but at the time were believed to be right. I'm thinking about with respect to masks and immunity, these kinds of things. To some extent, checking information in this time of uncertainty, when we're only, as one of my guests put it recently, in the third inning when it comes to understanding this virus, is pretty challenging.
You're absolutely right. It's enormously challenging. And I think, you know, those kind of steps need to be taken where there is a clear scientific consensus about something, you know, such as the scientific recommendations about precautions that ought to be taken about the dangers of different treatment. You know, if you look at, for example, the bleach issue, whether people should ingest bleach, clearly, that could be very dangerous for people to do. And I think making sure that good information is pushed out and any misinformation about that is countered is important. I think, you know, similarly, we're reaching the point where, you know, the pushing out of information about hydroxychloroquine and how it could be dangerous if you take that unsupervised by a physician, that's important to do. Other things, you know, I think the in both in the public and private sector, we're going to have to try to provide the best state of the information at the time we have it and approach those issues that are still uncertain by acknowledging the uncertainty around them.
Well, you mentioned President Trump in this vein, and he's seems to be in a kind of combative, typical counterpunching combative stance now where Twitter is concerned, because they he's saying they're disregarding his right to free speech and all that sort of thing. I don't want to necessarily get into the weeds on that, but I wanted to get your response to an executive order which is supposed to be issued today by the Trump administration to curtail legal protections that shield social media.
Well, we'll have to see what regulation they have in mind. The president often makes claims that are both at odds with the law, but also things he never goes and implements because they're so problematic. Here, it looks like they've already given prior thought to attacking social media companies this way. So we'll have to see what the regulation is. There's no way that they can, by regulation, though, repeal a grant of immunity that's been provided by Congress in statute. And what's more, if the regulation, of course, runs afoul of the First Amendment, it will be struck down on that basis. But the president's real goal, I think, is less to have a successful regulation and more, as you say, to counterpunch and to try to intimidate any company that really gets in his way to any appreciable extent and to censor the press. So whether it's, you know, this attack now on Twitter because it fact-checked a false claim the president was making, that could put people's franchise at risk, their vote at risk, or it's his attacking the Washington Post by trying to harm Amazon that shares the same CEO, Jeff Bezos, or his threat to pull the license of NBC. Time after time, we've seen the president believe that he is above the law, including the First Amendment, and he has a right to use all the tools of state power to censor the press. That's just not the case. We're not going to allow that to happen, but that's certainly his inclination.
Well, we had David Frum on yesterday, and he was opining that the president in some ways appears to be above the law because you can't go after him with these kinds of things. He can say something about Joe Scarborough being responsible for the death of a young woman who worked for him. And what are you going to, you're going to haul him into court and you're going to essentially prosecute him? He's the president of the United States.
Well, you know, ultimately, we have two remedies, one which we used in the House, which is to impeach the president when he abuses the powers of his office or engages in corrupt conduct. The senators, though, and I think the GOP more broadly within the Congress, are less a party now and more a cult of personality around the president. So they're not going to respond, and they didn't, the way I think their oath and the Constitution require. The other remedy, though, is coming up in November. And we're going to have to use it because I think each day, and in particular now that the administration's failings have been so fatally revealed during the pandemic, his actions are going to become more and more desperate over the days and weeks to come.
There is a kind of counter-narrative that has emerged from the Trump administration, particularly in light of well, post-impeachment and the politics of post-impeachment, but also the way they have been trying to frame things. And I think it has to do with you're sort of at the center of this as one of the villains and everything, but it's there was nothing in the way of collusion. There was nothing really where Russia was concerned, and therefore this has all been, again, a conspiracy. It's out there on social media as well.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I think in an effort to distract from the tragic and abysmal handling of this pandemic, which now has reached the grim milestone of 100,000 people, Americans who have lost their lives, the president wants to distract. And their strategy is to try to reimagine the Russia investigation in which he is a victim, a poor victim, not the fact of the matter, which is that he solicited Russian help. The Russians interfered systemically, as both the Congress and Bob Mueller found. They did so to help his campaign. They did so to harm Hillary Clinton. There were two investigations going on, one of Hillary Clinton's emails and one of Donald Trump's campaign. And one was kept secret, that being the one of Donald Trump's campaign. One was very public. In fact, one was very public in the last month of the election. So this counter narrative that somehow the FBI was out to get him and the Russia investigation should have never taken place, that runs against very hard facts, which are difficult for them to overcome. But they've got a bully pulpit in the Oval Office. They've got Fox News primetime to amplify all their false counter narrative, and they're going to do the best they can.
What about the narrative that has come not only from the Trump administration, but also from people like Mitch McConnell, that Twitter particularly, but also Facebook, that these social medias are biased against conservatives? There was, in fact, a big story in the New York Post about a young man named Yoel Roth, who's head of post-policing for Twitter, who had actually put on some tweets that were very anti-Trump and very anti-conservative. In fact, used words like Nazis about the Trump administration. So this argument has been given some credence. Your thoughts?
Well, this has been an argument that the president has made for years now, I think as a way of trying to browbeat the social media companies and in particular Twitter, which he likes to use, to push them in a direction more favorable to him. And I think, frankly, he's had a lot of success. I think if you look at Facebook's policy, where they will publish ads they know, political ads they know are demonstrably false, is a result of this pressure from the Trump administration. I think that's a terrible and misguided policy. If you can't broadcast on your airwaves or through your platform knowingly false political ads, then why should they be published on social media platforms? They shouldn't. That, I think, has been of great advantage to the Trump campaign, which has trafficked in a lot of falsehood and continues to do so. So I think he's had success in making this argument. that somehow the social media companies are biased against him when he has probably the most powerful social media presence of any American.
Talking with Congressman Adam Schiff, he's Democratic congressman representing California's 28th district in Los Angeles County, also chairs the House Intelligence Committee. And we do want to hear from you. If you have questions for Congressman Schiff, or if you'd like to join this conversation, you can give us a call right now. The toll-free number to call is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Or get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions to forum@kqed.org. Congressman, there's been some talk from social media representatives and platform executives that they're stepping up efforts. But the scale of this, I mean, I was reading an article about how Snopes is just overwhelmed with fact-checking. And so, of course, are fact-checkers overwhelmed. They're working overtime, no doubt. And the credit for much of the things that go wrong has to do with migrating from, let's say, one kind of platform to another platform and so forth. I mean, this problem also has us kind of baffled about who's doing the checking here. Twitter has been using a lot of artificial intelligence, and I think Facebook has maybe about 60 full-time people. It's just not enough. I mean, we learned that certainly in the last election, didn't we?
We did. I think you could at least make some colorable claim in the last election that the social media companies were taken unawares by what foreign powers might do on their platforms. I'm not sure that's fully accurate, but there's no excuse now. They've had years to prepare for certainly this fall in terms of any additional foreign intervention. But they've also had years of experience of how those platforms are being used to spread fear and lies, to create divisions in our society, and to respond to them. And they have a long ways to go in meeting any of these challenges. Now, I think they've taken some positive steps in dealing with coronavirus and misinformation. I've been in constant contact with the tech companies about this to find out what are they doing about it, what are they going to do about it. Obviously, it's most effective if they can make sure their viewers are not seeing patently and dangerously misleading information. But when they do, they need to be informed about it. They need to be directed to good resources, sound places to look for information to keep themselves and their families healthy. And I think they have a lot of work to do.
Again, our guest is Congressman Adam Schiff. I'm going to read a comment from a listener named Chris who says, Twitter is a private business. Perhaps the company should apply the same rule for all, shut its doors for a few weeks before the election and see how the president enjoys equality and fairness in the media. Let's face it, these platforms are at the forefront of the media, particularly for the president. And Arthur asks, isn't it time to regulate the internet as a public utility? The internet has become the public commons for our country's communications, along with radio and TV. Shouldn't the FCC have jurisdiction and regulate the internet for the common good? Your thoughts, Congressman?
Well, you know, it's interesting, the president attacking the immunity that the social media companies have. He's attacking it because they are doing fact-checking or starting to do fact-checking. Many of us have had the opposite concern about that immunity provision, which is that it immunizes bad behavior in allowing false, misleading, and dangerous content to proliferate without any accountability. So you have, you know, I think people in both parties concerned about the immunity that the tech companies enjoy and wondering whether that immunity is still appropriate in light of the fact it was provided to the industry at a time they were, you know, nascent companies. We didn't want to stifle their innovation. But I do feel, in particular, when it comes to political advertising, that they should be held to the same standard that any other entity that is regulated by the FCC should be held to. So these are issues that that the Congress is doing oversight on. I don't know that there's any consensus yet or emerging on it, but you see the quite disparate reaction here to the Trump campaign being upset and the president being upset that the social media companies are actually doing some social diligence, and many of us in Congress upset that they haven't done more of that.
What do you think about what Mark Zuckerberg said in light of this whole flap with Twitter? He said the social media platforms shouldn't be arbiters of truth.
Well, I think that Facebook is taking that position, and Mr. Zuckerberg's taking that position because they don't want to lose political advertising. They don't want to have to take down political ads that are patently false. They don't want that responsibility. And look, I can understand it, I guess, from a business point of view, that, you know, all advertising is good advertising. It pays the bills. But as a corporate citizen, the idea that you accept knowingly false content from political campaigns because it's from political campaigns, I think that's a terrible policy. But I do think that this triangulation that Facebook is doing to try to distinguish itself from Twitter right now is undermining Twitter's effort at accountability. And I think that's a terrible mistake.
Let's go to our callers. Joshua, you're up. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. My question to the congressman is that given the gross negligence and mismanagement of the president, which is causing untold numbers of unnecessary deaths, as well as economic harm, you know, the congressman referred to the election and impeachment as remedies, but why is the congressman not calling for the resignation of the president every single day and calling on his colleagues to do the same?
Oh, I think I've called on that a long time ago, but, you know, I can call on the president to step down every day, and indeed he should, but it's obviously not going to have an impact. I think that to the degree that we look for some kind of a cure-all, you know, the only cure-all that I can see at this point, because no matter how egregious the president's actions, my GOP colleagues will not hold him accountable, and one party alone cannot hold him accountable, at least not completely. The only remedy is to vote him out of office, and we will shortly have an opportunity to do that. I think that this country will be unrecognizable if we have to endure another 4 years of this destructive, amoral presidency. But certainly I could call for him to resign every day. I just don't think it would be a very effective thing to do. He's certainly not going to heed my wishes in that regard.
Well, here's a related question from a listener named Casey, who says, I want to see this related question. Why didn't the House, this is from Bill, actually, why didn't the House adopt a censure motion instead when the Senate wouldn't convict the president? Would have passed, wouldn't it? Bill writes.
It would have passed. But of course, the impeachment passed in the House. And impeachment was viewed, I think, quite properly as a far more powerful form of censure in the House than a censure resolution. From my point of view, where a president of the United States so clearly abuses the power of his office, impeachment is the appropriate remedy. And the fact that the senators would be unwilling to do their job didn't obviate the need for us to uphold our constitutional duty in the House. I think it was also very important that we try the case not only for the senators, but we tried for the American people.
You haven't come around then to the opinion, Congressman Schiff, that this was a perfect phone call that was made to the Ukraine head of state?
I'm sorry, did I ever come around to that view?
Yeah, I'm being facetious. trying to bring a little levity in here. I'm going to bring in another caller, though. James joins us. James, you're on.
Yes, I do. Thank you for taking my call. My question is this, why do we always turn to President Trump as the policymaker, the person that makes all the decisions? Why doesn't Congress pass laws, pass policies, especially on PPEs? It is absolutely deplorable that we do not have PPEs. Why doesn't Congress pass laws with a 2/3 majority and just override anything the president does? Why is that not the case?
Well, in fact, we have passed laws, the CARES Act, multiple versions of the CARES Act, which provided billions and billions of dollars of funding to develop, to purchase PPE. We've urged the president to invoke the Defense Production Act to require companies to make PPE. We've appropriated scores of billions also for testing and tracing. But it's very hard to compel an administration to use the funds and to use them in a competent way. What's really missing here is not the resources, which Congress has passed and passed on a bipartisan basis, and those bills have become law. But you can't legislate competence if it doesn't exist in the administration. It's very hard to force the president to take actions if he's unwilling to do it. And right now, what we need is we need national leadership to make sure that we're producing enough PPE, to make sure that states are not competing with each other and outbidding each other, that rather the federal government is organizing the effort to make sure that every state has the protective gear that they need, that every state has the ventilators they need, that we have the testing capacity nationwide, that we have the tracing ability, that we stand up the little army that we're going to need to trace people, army in terms of the people power we need. So we have legislated all of those things, but what we have is an incompetent president whose paramount concern is only his own personal welfare and his electoral prospects, who doesn't want responsibility because he realizes what a tragic failure his conduct this pandemic has been. And that's a hard thing to legislate over.
What happened, Congressman Schiff, to those articles that came out of the impeachment with respect to obstruction of justice? It seemed like Attorney General Barr and Rosenstein just sort of put the kibosh on it and moved on as if those articles weren't even there.
Well, you know, certainly Bill Barr made it clear that he would not countenance any indictment of the president, no matter how strong the proof was of his obstruction of justice. I think the evidence was very strong in the Mueller report. I think there's even stronger evidence, at least more detailed evidence in the grand jury transcripts, which we have been fighting all the way to the Supreme Court to obtain. Bill Barr is trying to shield that information from Congress. It's, of course, more than ironic, I think, you know, deeply hypocritical that you have the president calling for transparency in the investigation and yet fighting all the way to the Supreme Court to prevent the American people and the Congress from learning what these witnesses said to the grand jury. I think the practical reality is that any articles on obstruction of justice would meet the same fate as the articles on the president's Ukraine misconduct. We're going to continue to pursue that information, though, and hopefully we'll prevail in the Supreme Court. But I imagine we'll find out in this case and in others whether the Supreme Court is merely a conservative court, in which case they will rule in our favor, or they're now just a partisan court and a partisan institution like every other.
Talking again with U.S. Congressman Adam Schiff, and let me go to John in San Jose. John, join us. You're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. It occurs to me that as we're talking about, ways that we can get relief or remedy President Trump's behavior, there is another action we could take in some instances, which is suing him in civil court. I mean, with regard to Twitter, for example, you know, he posts something that's clearly defamatory, clearly false about Joe Scarborough. Why can't Joe Scarborough just sue him in a court of law and use those libel laws that we all know President Trump so disdains? It seems to me that in some instances that would effectuate some relief. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that, Congressman Schiff.
Well, you know, we certainly have, you know, we both the Congress and the public have used litigation as a really important strategy. Indeed, we are litigating to obtain the testimony of people like Don McGahn, the transcripts from the grand jury, the accounting records, the bank records. So we are certainly using litigation as one very important tool. But in terms of the president's libel or defamation against Joe Scarborough, you know, public figures have a very wide and broad latitude. It's very difficult, I think, to sue a public figure for libel and succeed. And it may very well be, you know, Joe Scarborough's view or the family's view that suing the president would simply give him what he wants, which is more attention to distract the public from his, you know, abysmal handling of the crisis facing the nation. And the president does this for a reason. It's not as if, these false statements he's making about Scarborough is some matter of national importance. I mean, it's a terrible abuse of the family. It's a horrendous and inhuman abuse of this poor family that suffered the loss of a loved one. But he's doing it to distract because he doesn't want people focused on the fact we've lost 100,000 American lives. So let's talk about Joe Scarborough, because Joe Scarborough, among others, is holding him accountable for the loss of 100,000 American lives. And So litigation in that case may just give the president what he wants, which is more people talking about what he wants to talk about rather than the serious problems facing the country.
Well, you mentioned, Congressman, the human side of this, and the widower of the young woman who lost her life begged Jack Dorsey of Twitter to take those comments down, and he refused. And what do you make of that?
Well, look, I think if they're false and defamatory, that Twitter should take action and put the same kind of false disclaimers on the president's statements. I think that would be appropriate. I'd have to think about under what circumstances tweets are removed and taken down, but I would certainly put this in the category of the most egregious false information. So whatever the most stringent policy is of the companies, I think should be applied to this this Twitter nonsense.
Well, while we have you here, Adam Schiff, I would be remiss if I just didn't ask you about the Senate Judiciary Committee inquiry into the Mueller investigation. What do you think will come out of that, if anything?
I think, a couple things will come out of it. It will just further the president's effort to distract, but it will also undermine the institutions of our government. Bill Barr and now Senate Republicans are doing everything they can to, I think, impugn the integrity and destroy the independence of the Justice Department because it suits the president's political interests. But in the meantime, they're also relying on really unreputable sources of information in Ukraine. They're pushing Ukraine conspiracy theories that many of which originate in the Kremlin. And so they continue through other means of doing the same dirty work, the same scheme that got the president impeached, the same effort to smear the Bidens and cover for the president is being carried on now just through other means. And it's so destructive of our institutions. But I think it is a cardinal illustration of one of Steve Bannon's maxims, which is that the Democratic Party is not their opposition. The opposition is the media. And the way to combat the media is the zone of experts.
Adam Schiff, appreciate your being with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's Congressman Adam Schiff, Democratic congressman who represents California's 28th District in Los Angeles County and chairs the House Intelligence Committee. And we have another hour of Forum up ahead for you, so stay tuned for that. It's next. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.